好的，那我们今天就开始我们的这个定量核磁中国社区的系列讲座的第二讲。在开始之前的话呢，有几个事情给大家说一下，就是今天我们的这个会议是提供同声传译的，所以大家如果要希望要听到那个中文的这个传译的话，可以点击下方的这个同声传译的这个窗口，选择这个中文来听取。然后第二个事情呢，就是大家如果有什么问题要提出问题的话呢，请在这个 Q&A 就是这个提问的这个窗口下提交问题，不要在这个聊天的窗口下，因为聊天窗口可能我们就注意不到，这个问题就过去了。第三个事情就是今天的这个演讲的这个内容的话呢，我们会后会分享给大家，所以这个我们的同事会按照大家注册的这个邮箱会发送给大家。那好，我们就今天正式开始今天的这个讲座。今天讲座的这个内容的话呢，是讲良好乘凉规范在定量核磁当中的使用的一些要求。大家肯定有一个问题，就是说的这个良好乘凉规范或者这个天平的使用，这个已经不是一个新的话题了，因为对于药品的这个质量控制来说，尤其是在定量测试当中，这个话题已经谈论的比较多了。为什么我们还要在定量核磁中专门把这个事情要拿出来，要专门去说一下？这是这个原因的话呢，主要是因为我们现在美国药典的定量核磁的这个章节761的这个章节的修订草案，在今年7月1号就正式推出来征求公众意见了。在这个草案当中的话呢，大家会看到对于定量核磁的这个方法开发还有方法学的研究，我们就是采用了一种新的方式，有别于传统的这个方法验证1225、1226、1224的这个方法，而是使用了一个不确定度的这种方式来进行方法开发和方法学的一个研究。为什么要采用这个不确定度的这个研究这种方法呢？它有这个计量学上面的一些考虑。这个的话呢，我们会在后续的这个讲座中跟大家再详细的讲解这个问题。但是这个地方的话呢，就引出来一个问题。因为定量核磁的这个技术的话呢，它是一个就是绝对的定量的一种方式。从计量学的角度上来说，它的这个准确度相比其他的一些分析方法准确度要更高。从不确定度的这个角度来说，但是正因为如此，在这个称量的这个环节的话呢，它的这个如果不按照这个良好的称量规范进行操作，就会引入非常大的一个不确定度的一个因素。所以我们希望通过这一次的这个讲座，给大家介绍一下良好称量规范和如何控制好这个在称量环节引入的这个不确定的这个因素。今天的话呢，我们也非常有幸请到来自于这个梅特勒托利多公司的 Klaus Fish 博士。Fish 博士呢，是梅特勒托利多实验室称量全球业务合规经理。自2005年以来，一直任职于梅特勒托利多，作为资深计量学家，他为行业提供指导，以确保在使用称量仪器时符合相应的法规。Klaus 是美国药典通则41天平和1251分析天平称量专家顾问组成员，同时也是欧洲药典天平通则专家小组成员，也是 Euromat 非自动衡器校准指南 C-G18 技术委员会委员、 ASTM 非自动衡器技术委员会委员以及 ISO TC34 QMR 标准工作组成员。在中国呢， Klaus 也支持 NIM， 也就是中国计量科学研究院编写了电子天平校准规范 JJF1847。该规范于2020年发布。Fish 博士呢，于1997年在德国慕尼黑工业大学获得物理学博士学位。在加入梅特勒托利多之前， Fish 博士曾担任制药和化学行业的顾问，主要关注风险管理和过程安全。今天Klaus 带给我们的报告的内容是良好称量规范确保准确的定量核磁样品制备。报告的内容主要是介绍一下，因为定量核磁的准确性在很大程度上受称量精度的影响，因此定量核磁的一个关键步骤呢，是标准物质和样品的称量。本报告强调作为 确定天平测量不确定的基础校准的重要性，并介绍了源自校准的最小称量的概念。这个概念呢，描述了为达到要求的称量精度而必须称量的最小样品量，这是避免天平成为整个定量核磁分析测量不确定度的主要影响因素。本报告还介绍一种自动化称样和标准制备的策略，可降低称量不确定度并防止操作人员接触有害物质。除了校准之外呢，还强调了通过实时基于风险的策略进行定期性能确认的重要性。所有这些工作都是将天平整合到生命周期管理中，建立良好规范，以保证在整个生命周期内保持称量精度的一致性。下面呢，我们就把时间交给Klaus。Let's welcome the Dr. Klaus Fritsch.
Okay. Sherman Chen Shangmen, Niemen Hao. Huan Ying Wang de Yan Tao Hui. What it means is Klaus. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome also from my side to this webinar on good weighing practice for quantitative nuclear magnetic resonance spectroscopy. I'm very happy to be with you, and I would like to talk with you about weighing, which is a very important milestone within the QNMR sample preparation. Let's start the presentation. So, weighing is one of the most important steps within the QNMR sample preparation and spectroscopy. Weighing stands at the beginning of the sample preparation, and it requires using accurate balances in order to achieve an accurate QNMR final result. That's a very challenging, a very demanding process, because usually quantities in the milligram range are weighed. And during this webinar, we will learn how to meet the challenges of weighing small samples to ensure consistently accurate weighing results. You all know about the formula, how the purity of a sample with QNMR is calculated. And part of the equation is also the mass of the sample and the mass of the standard that are weighed for QNMR spectroscopy. And of course, weighing contributes to the so-called measurement uncertainty of the final QNMR result. And therefore, we need to make sure that the uncertainty of weighing does not really negatively influence the final result. We shall try to minimize the uncertainty of weighing. In other words, we shall try to maximize the accuracy of the weighing process. And that's a very challenging process. In the past, many studies have been made on the influence of weighing on the QNMR. And for one example, I show you here, which was done in Germany. And in this analysis, the institute that was carrying out the analysis was using a so-called ultra micro balance to weigh sample and standard. An ultra micro balance is the most accurate weighing instrument that is available. It can indicate the result with a resolution of 0.1 micrograms. And this is a highly sophisticated instrument. We see here with the green bars, if an ultra micro balance is used, the measurement uncertainty of the weighing process can be quite nicely minimized. So in this analysis, the dominant uncertainty actually came from the purity of the reference standard in the order of 0.10%. And the weighing uncertainty was much smaller because an ultra micro balance was used. So the final result, the final uncertainty was in the order of 0.15%. So we see weighing is a very essential contributing factors to the quality of the QNMR analysis. Before we go deeper into the weighing itself, let me briefly highlight from the USP point of view which chapters provide information or direction for QNMR, but also for the balances to be used for weighing sample. We have two mandatory chapters within USP, General Chapter 41, Balances, and General Chapter 761 for NMR spectroscopy. These chapters are mandatory. Then we have two informational chapters for weighing, a very nice chapter 1251, which describes very much in detail the usage of analytical and microbalances. And we will come back to this a little bit later. And then, of course, a chapter for QNMR, the chapter 1761. The NMR chapter suggests to weigh large amount of substances in order to get accurate results. The issue with this approach is that sometimes you want to weigh very small amounts of substances because you only need a few milligrams or even less. And also the substance might be expensive, also might be toxic or otherwise harmful. So you would like to minimize the usage of substances for NMR. So we have to find out how we can weigh very small sample sizes, but still obtain very accurate weighing results. A very important prerequisite for accurate weighing is a proper installation of the balance. That's extremely important for micro and ultra micro balances, that the installation location is free from external influences, like, for example, direct sunlight, temperature variations, air currents, electrostatic or magnetic forces, or also vibrations. Because an ultra micro balance, it's very sensitive. So it would also react to external influences, which we should avoid. Another very important consideration is to use stable weighing benches, additional protection if needed against electrostatic charges, for example, by the usage of so-called ionizers. And of course, also by instrument design, minimize the air currents, for example, by doors that are confining the weighing chamber. So that's the basic prerequisite to obtain accurate measurement results. But then, of course, the balance itself shall be able to deliver accurate results. And here I would like to refer to a very important chapter within USP, the general chapter 41 about balances, that stipulates very specific requirements for balances, which are used for quantitative analysis. So this chapter 41 applies for all quantitative analysis, or also if in a specific monograph of USP, it is required to weigh accurately a sample or a standard. The scope of USP chapter 41 is described in the USP general notices and requirements, and I've copied the relevant chapters onto this slide. Before we go more into detail, maybe let's go a bit into the history and the purpose of this general chapter. The USP general chapter is quite old. It already exists around 60 or even 70 years. And the general chapter 41 was written to minimize in general for analysis processes the error and the uncertainty of weighing. So that's the prime objective of general chapter 41, minimize the negative or any detrimental influence of weighing, any error, any uncertainty for the overall analysis that the user wants to carry out. And especially for QNMR, this is highly relevant because the QNMR uncertainties are usually equally quite small. So here it is specifically relevant to minimize the uncertainty of balances. And we have seen also earlier that you can achieve with QNMR uncertainties in the order of 0.1-0.2%. So you should make sure that the balance uncertainty is much smaller. So USP General Chapter 41 there is an important tool. So this means for such an analysis, you have two different ways how to deal with balance uncertainty. You can use General Chapter 41 as a requirement. So to ensure the measurement uncertainty is 0.1% or smaller. But then you would have to include the balance uncertainty into the overall QNMR uncertainty budget because it is relevant. Another strategy might be to try to minimize to a value much smaller than 0.10%, the uncertainty of balances, to really make sure this uncertainty is very small and even negligible as compared to the uncertainty of the whole QNMR analysis. So that are two different ways to treat balances within the uncertainty budget. Let's now have a look, an overview about three distinct requirements of USP General Chapter 41. First of all, it is required to use a calibrated balance. We will talk about calibration just in a moment. And then it is required to fulfill the acceptance criteria of two very specific tests. A repeatability test to assess the so-called precision of the measurement instrument, and an accuracy test to assess any kind of systematic deviations of the measurement instrument. And both the repeatability and the accuracy test have an acceptance criterion of 0.10% that the balance needs to fulfill. Now, let's talk a little bit about calibration. What is the process of calibration? Calibration quantifies the measurement uncertainty. So what you would do, you would perform specific tests on the balance in order to find out, to calculate the measurement uncertainty of the device. For example, you would get as a result, yeah, I weigh 1 milligram, but the uncertainty of this weighing of 1 milligram, as an example, is 0.0005 milligram. I will show you on the next slide some more information to this topic. So calibration is very important to determine, to quantify the accuracy, and it also ensures the traceability to the so-called SI, to the International System of Units. Calibration just in the last years got very important also in China. And calibration is very much promoted also by the metrology law of the People's Republic of China. In the last years, the NIM in Beijing, the National Institute of Metrology, was writing a calibration specification for electronic balances. And it was my pleasure to help NIM drafting and writing this calibration specification. It is JJF 1847, and it describes the calibration procedure and the uncertainty estimation for electronic balances. This standard is harmonized with a guideline called Euromet CG18, which originated from Europe, but which is right now used worldwide. So I'm happy that also the Chinese calibration specification JJF 1847 is harmonized with calibration procedures in other parts of the world. Usually in China, calibration laboratories are accredited by CNAS, the accreditation body of the PRC. And Metal Toledo as well is accredited for balance calibration. And you see the example of a calibration certificate of balances on the right side of the screen. Within calibration, you would carry out specific tests, 3 different tests, a test for repeatability, a test for eccentricity, and a test for error of indication. Due to time, I cannot go into detail of these tests, but I'm happy to discuss this further with you after the webinar, or of course, even later, with our colleagues from Metlar China to provide you more information on calibration in general. Now let's go back. Let's assume we calibrate a balance. And as an example, we find out that the measurement uncertainty when weighing 1 milligram of substance is 0.0005 milligram. An example. Now, let's assume you as a user have a specific requirement. For example, your requirement is to fulfill USP General Chapter 41. So you would try to achieve an accuracy of 0.10%. On the bottom of this slide, we see this case. The so-called process tolerance is 0.10%, so you can allow for deviations from the 1 milligram up till 0.001 milligram. And in this example, we see that the measurement uncertainty So the performance of the balance is much better than your user requirement, your process tolerance. And this is exactly a very practical definition of accuracy. On the one hand, we have your user requirement. For example, a target measurement uncertainty that you want to achieve. We see this on the right side. The instrument is calibrated, and because we calibrate the instrument, we know how accurate it is. And now we have to compare the accuracy of the measurement instrument based on calibration with your user requirement, with the process tolerance. So if the measurement uncertainty is smaller than your weighing process tolerance, you are fine. You fulfill your requirement. How does measurement uncertainty for balance typically look like? Again, we look more closely into a calibration certificate for balances. And what you see here is the measurement uncertainty as a function of the load that you place on the balance pan. And we see the more substance you weigh, the higher gets the so-called absolute measurement uncertainty. The absolute measurement uncertainty is indicated, for example, in the units of milligram or microgram. So the more you weigh, the higher gets the measurement uncertainty, and the calibration will exactly find out how this curve looks like. And this curve is slightly different for every instrument. It shows the actual performance of the device. Now let's make one step. Let's go from the absolute measurement uncertainty to the so-called relative measurement uncertainty, which is nothing else than the absolute measurement uncertainty divided by the load. And this is then normally indicated in percent. And we clearly see the smaller quantities you weigh, the higher gets the relative measurement uncertainty in percent. Maybe 1%, maybe 2%, maybe 5%, maybe 10%. The less you weigh, the higher gets the relative measurement uncertainty. So then we have to ask ourselves, can we rely on such measurements? Can we rely on measurements with an uncertainty of 10%? The answer actually is quite simple. Because we have defined a so-called user requirement, a weighing tolerance. For example, a weighing tolerance of 0.10%. What we discussed 5 minutes ago was that we fulfill the user requirement, the weighing tolerance, if the relative measurement uncertainty in percent is smaller than the weighing tolerance. So when we weigh in the red area to the left of the curve, our uncertainty is higher than the weighing tolerance, and we do not comply. If we weigh more to the right side, our uncertainty is smaller than the required tolerance, and we comply. And the limit value, which I've here indicated with a circle, it's the smallest amount of substance that needs to be weighed in order to fulfill the weighing tolerance requirement. This is a very important property, and it has a specific name, We call it minimum sample weight, or in short, minimum weight. And this makes weighing quite simple. The user needs to make sure he weighs more than the minimum weight to fulfill his user requirement. I've indicated here in this curve a yellow area. This means a safety factor. As you all know, the performance of an instrument and also the performance of a balance might change over time. Maybe the environment changes slightly from the morning till the afternoon. You also have different users working on the balance. So it makes sense to apply a so-called safety factor. This means not directly weighing at the minimum weight, but weigh in higher amounts of substances. The safety factor for balance is taken into account by dividing your tolerance requirements by a factor. In this case, for example, we have chosen a safety factor of 2. And we see the end of the yellow area corresponds where the measurement uncertainty of the balance hits the value of 0.05%. So if we apply a safety factor of 2, then we cover quite well in the laboratory all the potential fluctuations that might occur over time. So we recommend to the user that his smallest amount that he wants to weigh, the smallest net weight, lies in this green area of the curve. The green area has a specific name. It is called the safe weighing range. And calibration finds out the safe weighing range. So then you know how much substance you can weigh to make sure you are not exceeding a specific weighing tolerance requirement. The minimum weight is made transparent in the calibration certificate. So based on the calibration certificate, based on the calibration results, the minimum weight is calculated and shown in the calibration certificate. So for example, here, for this specific balance, calibration found out that the minimum weight for a safety factor of 2 is roughly 0.4 milligrams. So if the user defines, for example, I would like to weigh 0.4 milligrams or more, then the user is safe to fulfill his stipulated weighing tolerance requirement. He is in the safe weighing range. Just to highlight very briefly again the situation of balance performance over time. As we just saw, and I've now made an example with different values, the measurement uncertainty and the minimum weight might slightly change over time. For example, here, when you install a new balance and you calibrate it, and maybe this is a micro balance, a six-place balance, the minimum weight was derived 2.0 milligram. The next calibration usually starts with a so-called as-found calibration, which means the technician would calibrate the balance again before he makes any kind of modification or adjustment. And for example, the technician finds out now the minimum weight is a bit higher, 2.4 milligram. But this is still safe because the user has defined to always weigh 5 milligram or more, which we see at the top of the curve. The user smallest net weight is 5 milligrams. So 2.4 milligrams, it's still okay. Then the technician would optimize the balance performance, adjust it, maybe clean it, and then he would carry out a so-called S-left calibration. So a calibration providing the status when the technician leaves the balance. And here we might get a value as an example of 1.9 milligrams. And then the whole cycle continues. When the technician comes back for the next calibration, he would again start with an as found calibration and so on and so forth. Now, let me just briefly show you one citation from USP chapter 1251 for analytical balances. The chapter 1251 describes different methods how weighing can be performed. And amongst other methods, USP also suggests that so-called gravimetric dosing can be carried out, which means it is not the user anymore who takes a small spatula to, for example, put some sample into a flask or a beaker, but the balance itself would dose the required amount into the target vessel. This means the user would program on the balance what amount of substance shall be dosed, and then the balance, by means of a small so-called dosing head and a motor, would dose the appropriate amount accurately into the weighing vessel. This is a method that USP chapter 1251 explicitly mentions. And why do I integrate this in this presentation? Because with this method, we can achieve a few benefits. With this method, the environmental effects are reduced even further because the user is taken away. The balance performs the dosing in the closed housing. This means the accuracy of the balance is increasing. What does increased accuracy mean? It means smaller measurement uncertainty. And smaller measurement uncertainty means also the minimum sample weight is smaller. And you can also apply a smaller safety factor because fluctuations of the balance performance are reduced. The environmental effects are reduced. This means by the end, you can potentially use only 50% of the amount of substance that you need for your QNMR as compared to a normal balance where you manually make the sample preparation. So you can save substance, you weigh less amount of material, so you save cost, you increase the accuracy, and also from the safety point of view, if you treat poisonous or toxic or otherwise harmful substances, you increase operator safety because it is the instrument that doses the substance and not the user anymore. And this might also be a good opportunity for QNMR sample preparation. You can also further increase the accuracy. And here I would like to refer to another USP chapter. It is USP chapter 841, which is called specific gravity. specific gravity talks about the conversion between mass and volume. And what is getting more and more used in the industry, when you dilute substances to prepare a solution, you have traditionally done this by a volumetric addition of the solution. So you have established concentrations in the unit milligram per milliliter. More and more users now go to a gravimetric addition of the solvent, which means they use the same automatic dosing process of the balance to not only dose the sample or the standard, but also dose very accurately the solvent to achieve a very accurate concentration, a concentration in the units of milligrams per grams. So if you are required for your sample preparation to not only weigh accurately the substance, but if you have a process where it's also required to accurately determine the concentration, the dosing also of the solvent is a very good option to increase the accuracy of the final concentration. Now, before we come to the end, just a last example from USP chapter 1251, which also talks about the so-called performance qualification. You need to calibrate and test the equipment periodically to ensure consistently accurate weighing results. So you would calibrate the device from time to time to establish the measurement uncertainty. However, in between calibrations, the user would normally also do very rapid, short tests to assess the performance of the device. This is called routine test. So maybe every week or every month, the user would also place specific test loads on the balance to check the reading and to assess whether the accuracy is still good enough. So we have a product life cycle. We do continuous performance verification. And this continuous performance verification constitutes of three pillars of calibration, of routine testing by the user. And what I only want to mention briefly, most state-of-the-art balances have so-called built-in adjustment weights. And these built-in adjustment weights are also used periodically, for example, daily, to adjust the sensitivity of the device. So to exclude, to minimize systematic errors that can happen on the balance. And these three activities together form a life cycle. It is described in USP General Chapter 1251. And also from Metal Toledo, we have consolidated this information into a scientific standard, which we call GWP, Good Weighing Practice, which gives clear recommendations on how often to test and to calibrate weighing instruments based on the specific user requirements. So USP is very strong at the life cycle. And there are also other chapters within USP. And I just want to mention one more. We have the USP chapter 1058, Analytical Instrument Qualification, that also discusses on the product life cycle of analytical instruments. For weighing, because this is the key competence of Mettler-Toledo, we have invested a lot of time and energy to develop a scientific standard we call GWP that takes care about the whole product life cycle of the weighing instrument, starting from the right selection of the instrument, for example, for a QNMR application, the installation of the instrument, the subsequent calibration, in China, according to the new calibration specification, JJF 1847, according to which we are accredited. And then we would also be able to recommend to the user the life cycle, how often to calibrate, to test the device, which test weights to use. That's the product life cycle that we also have established within what we call GWP verification. So this life cycle, which is also very important for QNMR, concludes my presentation, and I would like to give on the last slide a short summary before we come to the Q&A. So we have learned that a very important source of uncertainty for QNMR is the sample and the standard preparation process, which is done by weighing. The calibration determines the uncertainty of a measurement device, and this is very essential for any quality management system. When we calibrate balances, we are able to derive the so-called minimum weight. That's the most important consequence of the calibration, and it is established in the calibration certificate. The minimum weight is the smallest amount of substance that needs to be weighed in order to fulfill a specific weighing tolerance requirement that is given by the user. We have learned that automation of weighing increases the accuracy of the sample and standard preparation process, and it allows to weigh much smaller amounts of substances, still achieving the same accuracy. You can save up till 50% of your sample, which might also be beneficial from the cost point of view. Calibration is part of the product life cycle, and routine testing by the user is also an important element to calibration and to the life cycle. And this is carried out periodically by the user. Calibration is normally carried out by an accredited calibration laboratory in order to also establish a compliance with the CNAS accreditation requirements and the traceability to the SI, the International System of Units. So this means, after having talked a lot about product life cycle for balances, I hope I could give you some insight into the importance of weighing, and then we can go now back to our Q&A, and I'm now happy to answer any question that you might have. So I would like to encourage you, please type your questions in the chat in Chinese, and then the questions will be translated into English and presented to me and read to me, and I'm very happy to provide you any answer to your questions. So thank you very much so far, and I'm looking forward now to the discussion.
非常感谢 Klaus， 从非常专业的角度给我们分享了良好称量规范的一些要求。Klaus, you can stay in the English channel, so we have questions. So you. 就像我们刚开始在这个讲座的刚开始提到的这个。 称量的这个不确定度呢，我们为什么要在这个定量核磁当中重复提到这个称量的不确定度？如果大家关注美国药典的这个近几年的这个通则的话呢，会越来越 看到这个分析方法的生命周期，还有包括刚才 Klaus 提到的仪器验证的这个生命周期1058这些通则。在这些通则当中呢，对于方法学的这个研究，我们更就是逐渐的倾向于使用这个计量学的方式来进行一个研究。所以在这个计量学的研究当中的话呢，这个不确定度是一个最基本的一个概念。而这个称量的这个不确定度，天平的这个称量的不确定度的话呢，也是就是最基础的，但也是非常重要的一个概念。所以今天的话呢，我也希望通过这个讲座，给大家引入一些这个不确定度的计算呀，然后还有这个最小称量度的一些要求方面的一些概念。然后随着我们这个讲座的不断的深入的话呢，大家会了解到更多的不确定度的评估和计算的一些要求。下面的话呢，我们就进入到这个提问的环节。大家有任何问题的话呢，可以提交在这个提问的这个窗口下。我们有同传可以把这个问题翻译给 Klaus。如果有一些问题解释起来比较困难的话呢，我们还有张博在这个是梅特勒中国的这个Bruce 张博士可以帮助我们一起来解答这个问题。下面的话呢，我们就收到几个问题，我们先第一个问题先提出来。Klaus, the first question. 第一个问题是关于天平的日常测试的砝码应该如何选择，以及其接收标准应该如何制定。
I don't hear the English interpreter here. Could you repeat the question in English? I struggle getting the English channel here on the system.
Okay.张博，你能帮着来看一下翻译这个问题不 ？Bruce, can you hear me?
Yes.
能帮着翻译一下这个
？Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear.
Okay. Klaus, the question, two questions. The first one is about the balance test weights. Does it use the need to the legal qualification or such like a calibration?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe there is two parts of the answer.
Klaus, can you hear
me? Yes. Am I on loudspeaker? Yeah. Okay. Can you hear me? So the test weights. So on the one hand, within calibration, test weights are used by the calibration laboratory, which are traceable, and normally they are calibrated according to a specific CNAS, to specific standards. For example, in China, weights are calibrated according to JJG99. Also, the user, when carrying out routine tests, is using weights, but he is using weights not for calibration, but for a reduced testing of the device. This means the user himself would not define the whole calibration and not evaluate the measurement uncertainty of the balance. He would do very short tests to find out whether or not the balance is still accurate enough for the specific application. For example, USP General Chapter 41 talks about two specific tests that I have described earlier. One is a so-called repeatability test, which means you would place one test load 10 times on the balance, calculate the so-called standard deviation, and then the standard deviation needs to fulfill a specific requirement. For example, the requirement of USP General Chapter 41. And then there is a second test, a test for systematic deviations. Here you would normally, or the user would normally take one test node close to the maximum weighing range, close to the so-called capacity of the weighing device, place it on the device once, and compare the reading of the instrument with the weight value of the weight calibration certificate. And this difference, this systematic deviation, also needs to fulfill specific requirements. For example, those requirements from USP General Chapter 41. So in summary, the user normally carries out two very specific tests. The first one for repeatability, random error. The second one for accuracy, for systematic deviations. Could this answer the question?
Okay, the second question is about how to choose the right weights for a daily test for balance.
Okay, that's also a very good question. First of all, nobody requires a daily test. It is not required by USP. It is also not required in any standard that I'm familiar with. Daily testing was done in the past a lot with mechanical balances because they were very sensitive to mechanical changes, to movements, to abrasion. But electronic balances, today's generation of electronic balances, don't need daily tests anymore. And also USP says in General Chapter 1251 that the frequency of testing shall be based on the risk of the application, but also the built-in adjustment weights. So in the balances, we have weights built inside, and they are used for adjusting systematic errors. So what the today's state of the art is, the user would use the built-in weights maybe on a daily basis, and this can be programmed in the balance or executed manually to adjust the balance once per day. But this is not with external weights. This is just with internal weights. And this process can even be automated. You can tell the balance, please do it every morning before I start working. And then the external tests are done with a larger frequency, maybe weekly, monthly. For the repeatability test, you usually take a quite small weight. And USP recommends to use a weight, let's say around 5% of the weighing range of the device. So for example, if you have a device with a weighing range of 100 gram, this is an automated balance which can dose up to 100 gram. 5% of 100 gram would be 5 gram. So the repeatability test would be recommended to be carried out with a 5 gram weight piece. The second test for systematic deviations, USP recommends to go to the maximum weighing range, in this case to 100 gram, and take a 100 gram weight to check the system for systematic deviations. So a rather small weight for repeatability, for the random error and a big weight for systematic error. And also Metal Toledo can provide you more advice. Within our scientific standard GWP, we would give you very concrete recommendations which test weights to use in order to comply with USP requirements.
好的，我看到有很多的这个问题，因为要翻译成英文的话，可能需要比较准确的翻译。我们会在这个会后的话呢，把这个问题翻译好后交给那个 Klaus， 然后给大家一个反馈。我们再提最后一个问题，因为是英文的，我就不用翻译，直接给那个 Klaus。So Klaus, we have the because a lot of questions in Chinese, so need the accurate translation. So we will summarize the question and send to you and get your inputs. So the last question for you, because it's in English. So the question is, does the GWP allow user to calibrate their own balance?
Well, if the user calibrates the balance him or herself, he needs to have a procedure to also determine the measurement uncertainty. Determining the measurement uncertainty is a very sophisticated process. And in China, it is described in a calibration specification called JJF 1847, calibration specification for electronic balances. So, this is the, I would call it the cooking recipe, how to calibrate. However, this is quite a sophisticated process. The user could do it, but he needs a lot of experience, and he also needs to make sure to find out about the measurement uncertainty. What the usual process in China is that calibration labs get accredited according to an international standard, according to the so-called ISO 17025. And in China, it is CNAS, the Chinese accreditation body, which would accredit calibration labs to ensure the so-called competence of calibrations. And Metal Toledo is accredited according to ISO 17025 and can carry out calibrations of balances according to JJF 1847. And this is a specific characteristics of China, that accreditation is a very important way to promote the quality of measurements. However, this is also a question. If the user would like to understand more about accreditation in China, my colleagues of Metal Toledo China would also be very helpful in providing some more specific explanations for the Chinese regulatory situation.
Thank you, Klaus, for your nice presentation and the nice answers for the questions. So we are up against the time, and we will summarize the questions and for your inputs. And thank you very much. Have a nice weekend, and see you later.
非常感谢。
好的，也非常感谢各位在线的一个听众。今天的话呢，我们的这个讲座就到此结束。然后下一次的话呢，我们先做一个预告，就下一次我们的讲座可能是在一个月以后，因为我们的这个通则定量核磁的通则761在7月1号就会发在要点论坛上，所以我们也希望这个通则发出来的第一时间就给大家做一个简要的一个介绍，也希望能收集到大家的一个反馈，所以我们可能会在7月中下旬安排这个USP 定量核磁761的一个通则的一个讲座。再次感谢大家参加今天的一个讲座，然后我们下次再见，祝大家周末愉快，再见。